Hi, this is Adam Peacock from My Neighbors Are Dead. For the full month of October, My Neighbors Are Dead is going all in on the Friday the 13th series. And the best part is, we're upping our episodes to twice per week as we talk to all kinds of crazy characters from the world of Camp Crystal Lake, played by tons of amazing guests. Two episodes per week, all month long. Join us for My Neighbors Are Dead on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts. Welcome back to another episode of My Neighbors Are Dead. I'm your host, Adam Peacock, and we're all familiar with the big names in horror. Freddy, Jason, Mumra. But who we're not familiar with are the ones just outside the terror, the ones who didn't get to tell their tales. And helping me do that this week is the co-host of Scary Stories to Tell on the Pod. Please welcome Andrew Farmer. How are you, buddy?
I'm good. How are you doing?
I'm so good. Thank you so much for doing this.
I'm thrilled to be here, truly.
Tonight, we're talking about the House on Haunted Hill, but the original Vincent Price classic.
That is correct. The only one as far as I'm concerned.
The only one? I mean, there's what's not to love. Why this movie?
Well, I was a huge horror movie fan as a kid, but like classic sort of old Universal monster movie horror. Always had kind of a heart, especially for the Wolfman. Not so much a Dracula guy, but like Wolfman, Creature in the Black Lagoon, even the Mummy, sort of the B tier of the Universal monsters.
Yeah.
And my dad, I was probably 5 years old, and one night my dad brought back a VHS of House on Haunted Hill, and it kind of shaped a big part of my personality. I think like I saw Vincent Price in that moment, and I was like, oh, this is a good person to model myself after. the first time after watching it, my mom took me to the barber shop, and it was the first time when I was told to like tell the barber what I wanted.
Yeah.
And I told them to make me look like Vincent Price. And he kind of did, to his credit.
That's
he
gave amazing. He
gave me a very Vincent Price haircut, and roughly it's still my haircut to this day. So, I have a lot to thank Vincent for.
What all about him? Like, was it just his physical appearance, the way, like just his mannerisms? What about Vincent Price made you want to be like that?
That's a very good question. I've talked to a lot of other, for the most part, like gay men who are fans of old classic horror, and they've all had sort of a similar reaction, which is like Vincent Price was not a masculine actor.
Yeah.
Like he was very smart. He was very charming. There wasn't the sort of like, I love Cary Grant too, but there wasn't the sort of like performative machismo of Cary Grant. Like Vincent Price was just here to be clever. He had a great pencil thin mustache and he dressed well. And I think, I don't know, something about that really, really resonated with me. I think being a charming host who also was like well-read and could be a little spooky were all like very big pluses in my category.
It's funny, like, you know, because you see it now with like Vin Diesel and The Rock and all that garbage, you know, it's like, oh, as a kid, you're like, yeah, I want to do that. I want to beat up everybody. Then when you get older, you appreciate like, no, those guys sucked. Vincent Price was the way to go.
He was the best. Yeah. I think I was in Catholic school at the time. And in first grade, for the talent show, I dressed up as Vincent Price and recited a story that I had written about a skeletal bride trying to get back a ring from an unfaithful husband.
Oh my God, you were a much cooler kid than I was.
I think, Holy Trinity School did not know what to do with me.
What happened? Did you get in trouble? Because that seems like something you'd get in trouble for.
You know, I think for whatever reason, everyone sort of decided to give me a break. I think everyone was like, there's a lot going on here. Clearly this kid is working through a lot. So shockingly, I was bullied, I think, far too little as a kid. It went over very well. And in fact, as a kid, this was a thing that was bothersome to me. But the following year for Halloween, a kid in a couple grades under me was Vincent Price for Halloween. And I was like, you poser, like you don't know, you don't know what's what at all.
I I wore an Evil Dead t-shirt when I found that movie.
Oh, yeah.
And I made the mistake of wearing it around friends who had been familiar with that movie for long before I'd known it. So I got Red the Riot Act. Yeah, I was, you fucking poser. Like, you're not a real fan. You
know? Oh, Adam, we're kindred spirits in that way then.
You and I, yeah. I love that. Not bullied enough in high school.
Not nearly enough.
Was that the first Vincent Price movie you had seen?
It was, and it was it certainly was a bonding thing between me and my dad. I'm the youngest of four boys. My brothers were all really excellent athletes. That was just not going to be the case for me. I was like a little disabled kid who enjoyed the arts, and so it just was. My dad was like, "Okay, we're not going to play sports. We're going to watch Vincent Price movies." So yeah.
The House of your dad though too.
Yeah, I have a lot of respect for him for adapting so quickly. After House on Haunted Hill, we watched The Tingler, House of Wax, a lot of those sort of castle, like shticky horror movies. There's a really good one called Theater of Blood, I think.
Yeah.
Which is like, he's an actor who got bad reviews and he kills all of the critics at like how Shakespearean characters are killed. It's really very fun.
Movies used to be much better.
I think it was also that like there were just fewer people to be like, no, you can't make that movie. Like,
right,
like it was just sort of like if you had an idea and you wrote it down and someone had $5,000, like your movie was gonna get made.
What a time to be alive.
What a time.
My first one was Fives, Dr. Fives.
That's a good one.
Yeah, they used to make, I don't know if they still make them, but I think they were called Midnight Movies, like the DVD,
yeah,
like the series, you know? And that was one of the first ones that I bought.
Yeah, that's the one right where he's got like a skeletal face and his, mm-hmm. he talks through like a voice box.
Yeah, and the cover is like this really gnarly, like as a, you know, when I was younger, I thought it was the coolest thing in the world. Now, yeah. Older, like, oh, that's just a shitty skeleton mask.
Yeah. Yeah, but Vincent could pull it off. And then later in my life, for Christmas, I was in college. My dad got me a Vincent Price's autobiography, which I think is called I Know What I Like and I Like What I Know. But it doesn't talk at all about horror movies at all. He was a great benefactor to the arts, like gallery art, mm-hmm. and really sort of like made the careers of several American artists who aren't, you know, at the forefront of like American art history, but were able to like make livings off the fact that he really put them forward. His book is more like a lifestyle book about how to live luxuriously but sensibly, which also, again, it really ties into the whole gay thing pretty neatly.
I feel like if there's a show that should come back, it should be Lifestyles of the Rich and Famous. Certainly now, when people are just craving that kind of entertainment.
I do think that if that show came out now, the guillotines would be out real fast because it's sort of like we're really at powder keg moments here. But yeah, I
with
do
one
agree.
Of the most obnoxious hosts of all time, Robin Leach, like just way over the top and totally unnecessary.
I think as a kid, I was like, he's a huge celebrity. Like, I think I really was like, I mean, that's
what I thought too.
Right. Like he's got to be
this
huge.
Guy's in the know, man. Right. This guy, like people, this guy is like respected. And then you find out it's not the case.
No. I don't know what his claim to fame was before. Was he just a TV producer?
I don't know. I think he was just a really charming guy.
Yeah. It's that I'm not sure what the exact niche accent that is that he has. Like, I don't know. I don't know what area that specifically is from. But it is, I mean, like, that is now one of the most identifiable accents that you can point to one person. And that in itself is enough to be a celebrity, I think.
What's the phrase? I'm Robin Leach and I don't know why. Is that what it was? Am I making that up?
Was that it?
I think that's how he introduced the show, is I'm Robin Leach and I don't know why.
Wow, that's like a Zen cone. Wow.
It's almost
wild.
As good as the Chevy Chase, I'm Chevy Chase and you're not.
Oh, yeah, that's true. That's true.
Except one guy's way more likable.
Yeah, and boy, when that guy's Robin Leach, you know you're in big trouble, you know? I actually – sorry, go ahead.
Oh, no, go ahead. Go ahead.
I just – a quick Chevy Chase thing. I have the rare honor of having Chevy Chase take a dig at me in the New Yorker itself.
What?
Yeah. So right before the pandemic happened and the whole world came to a screeching halt, I was the head writer of a reboot of The Lemmings, which is like National Lampoon's old like sketch show about music festivals. And so like I was developing this new Lemmings show that was just about to open, and inexplicably the New Yorker came to the first rehearsal of it, and the person they decided to interview from the first cast of the Lemmings, which is an amazing crew of people. It's, you know, it's like Chevy Chase and Christopher Guest and Belushi. But the person they decided to interview was Chevy Chase. And they were like, what do you think about there being a new Lemmings? And he was like, I think it's pathetic. He was like, the fact that they would take this thing and remake it into something else. And I was like, oh, God. So, you know, I might put that on a card. Andrew Farmer, pathetic. And then Chevy Chase underneath
that's
that.
That's a pretty good quote.
Yeah. I
mean, if somebody's going to call you pathetic, it might as well be him.
I'm into it. You know, the enemy of your enemy. You know, I'll take it.
Just to go back to House on Haunted Hill,
yeah.
We were talking a little bit before we started. What are your thoughts on the remake?
Okay. So I saw the remake at a sleepover in 1999. It scarred me irreparably. I think it was sort of an early adopter of the kind of Jacob's Ladder shaky face thing. Like every ghost has one of the shaky faces. That scared me a lot. The cast is great. I mean, I will say it's a really good cast. It's, Jeffrey Rush, Famke Janssen, Taye Diggs, I believe, is in it, Ali Larder, Chris Kattan, very strangely.
Yeah.
And the actor from Reanimator, I think. I forget his name.
Jeffrey Combs.
Yes. And I also don't know this actress's name, but the actress who played Gozer in Ghostbusters is one of the nurses
in it. She's in that remake too.
Yeah, very weirdly. But yeah, that movie scared me a lot. I don't think I made it all the way through. It was one of those sleepover movies that I think we turned off because it just made all of us feel weird. It was like just super violent enough. I think Jeffrey Rush is a pretty suitable Vincent Price stand-in. I think like he does a good job. I think the thing is like, what's fun about the original House on Haunted Hill is it doesn't really make a lot of sense. It's like, it is incredibly campy. Everyone there is like an actor, except for Vincent Price, is an actor who's actually not having fun and is taking this very seriously. But it is such a nonsensical, like you're never really clear even at the end. It ends and you're like, oh, that's the end? Because I think it ends with one of the characters like looking at the screen and being like, now there are two more ghosts and now they're coming for you. And then it just zooms out of the house and you're like, oh, I thought we were going to maybe see some ghosts.
No, that's up for you to decide.
Right. And it's never really clear what is part of the like weird sex death game that Vincent Price and his wife are playing. Like there are severed heads involved, but you never know whether that's part of the like the conceit of the night or whether that's actually ghosts. There's like a big monster hand that appears for some reason. That's never really explained. I've watched this movie probably 60 times and I couldn't logic through it for you.
You would think as a couple, that's a lot of work to go through just to get your jollies.
Huge. I mean, even then to fake a hanging by wearing a harness. And then there's like a weird sort of rope trick that happens that I was always like, are they doing this? like a rope comes through a window and wraps around a woman's leg and then unwraps around her leg. And I mean, if this rich couple figured out a way to do that, then I guess more power to them.
Boy, what a waste of talent.
What an absolute waste. We could have gotten out of the Cold War a lot earlier if they had just put their energy towards
and
something.
And this is what you did with it? Made a fucking weird sex stuff? I'm super excited because when I was going through the, just, you know, looking at clips and reading up on it, the Ennis house, all the exteriors.
Yes.
We live, my girlfriend and I live right by that house. And
we walk by there
all the time. Yeah, it's great.
I also live in Los Feliz and it's quite close to where I am, although I've never seen it. I've seen the similar one in Barnsdall Park, when I first saw it, I was like, is that the House on Haunted Hill house? But it's just the same designer and very similar.
We, we were convinced when we walked by it the first time, because we knew there was a Frank Lloyd Wright house in the neighborhood.
Right.
And when the first time we saw it, we're like, this can't be it. This looks like an embassy. Not thinking. Oh, yeah, no, that's it.
How did they, something I've never been able to figure out, even though like I've done a lot of research into you know, Castle Films and obviously Vincent Price, like, I don't know how they managed to lock down that house, you know, on such a tiny budget. It feels like a thing that would be a big expense.
I feel like it feeds into that thing you were just saying about if you had $5,000 in a script, your movie was getting made. Everything was probably just way
that's
easier
true.
Back then. Just
that's
like
very
show
true.
Up, you know?
Oh, you're just going to be outside? Okay, yeah. Give me $200. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, all you needed to prove you weren't lying was just one camera.
Right. That's
well, they're making a movie.
Oh, guess, yeah. These are the picture people. Yeah.
Yeah, it was just way easier. Well, Andrew, I could sit here and talk to you about Vincent Price, and I'm sure all the connectivity you and I had as kids and all the same things that probably damaged us both.
Exactly.
But thank you so much for coming by.
Oh, my pleasure.
We got to take a quick break. We're going to talk to Leona Slides.
Yeah, old friend.
If you've been watching HBO's Lovecraft Country, our friends at Fansided have a great companion podcast we'd love for you to check out. The show is called Lovecraft Country Chronicles, and it not only covers the HBO show from a fan's perspective, but it does a great job of diving into the themes behind the story. Hosts Mia Johnson and Natalie Zamora welcome a diverse set of experts and fans each week. Ever wonder what the history was behind sundown towns? Want a crash course in Lovecraftian horror? This is the show for you. Check out Lovecraft Country Chronicles on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. Great. Well, thank you so much for joining me this evening. I hope everything is good for you.
Thank you so much for having me on your program.
Oh, my pleasure. I'm talking to Leona Slides.
Hello, Adam.
Hello, Miss Slides. How are you?
I'm doing fine. That's Slides with a Y and a D-E-S.
Slides with a Y and a D-E-S. So yes. Very nice to meet you. I've been super excited to get you on here since we got a hold of you. Let's not bury the lead. Housekeeper at the house on Haunted Hill.
That is correct, with my husband Jonas, Adam.
What was that like, Leona? I mean, I feel like you have just a plethora of stories to tell, but where's your head at with all this?
Well, I want you to know I very rarely see any of the frightening things. I'm just there during the light of day, and then my husband and I serve the dinner and leave out aperitifs, and then we usually head out. But then we come back the next day and clean up any of the body parts.
So this is a pretty routine thing for you and your husband to clean up.
Yeah. In Southern California, you know, this is Hollywood land, sweetheart. And so we have people coming in all the time. Aristotle Onassis had a party at the house on Haunted Hill. And typically we look at 5 to 7 deaths per party. And it's oddly, it's never 8 and it's only been 4 once. But 5 to 7 is really the sweet spot that we do fine. And, you know, frankly, we've gotten used to it.
What's the relationship like with the local authorities? Because I feel like after a while, they would start to really kind of bring the hammer down on you guys.
Right. Oh, yes. Well, there was a period of time that caused a great deal of confusion because it was not the ghost causing the murder for about half a decade in the early 70s. That was a cult that had camped out inside the house and was killing off guests. But for the most part, everyone on the police force at this point knows there are ghosts and knows that you get some good ones and you get some bad ones.
Yeah, I mean, that's fair to say, you know, a few bad apples, right?
Spoils the batch.
Spoils the whole batch. Talk to me. I'm fascinated with this cult thing. I wish we could just do a deep dive on this cult.
Oh, well, yeah, I mean, just scan my name and other podcasts. I've done a lot of cult talk. But no one, I don't know. It's not that interesting. He thought he was a new messiah. He had 40 wives. It's the same old, same old.
So you worked directly for Frederick Lorin and his wife, Annabelle.
For a brief time. Yes.
What was that like?
You know, sometimes you meet a couple and you don't know whether they love each other more than any couple you've ever met, or you don't know whether they're going to kill each other. And I think in this case, it was both, which in a way is inspiring because it means, I think what happens sometimes with people with a lot of money is they lose the will to do anything. But I think if you have the will to kill somebody, it means maybe there is some good that you have left to do on earth. you know?
Do you think that's the next step? Leona, do you think that's what it is? Is that what elevates a relationship? Is that willingness to murder somebody else or pretend to murder somebody else?
I mean, you know, again, it's like I came from a time period where I love my husband, Jonas, but we just lived in the same town and my father owed his father money. And so that's how that happened. But we retroactively made the relationship work. I do admit I have some jealousy for people who are passionate enough to deliver flowers, to make great displays of affection, or to elaborately plot a death house with which they're going to kill their spouse. I think something about that, it's just fun.
Well, let's, if you don't mind if we talk about your relationship with Jonas a little bit, because, you know, you kind of hit on something there that I thought was interesting. You know, you're jealous of people who have that kind of passion. Mm-hmm. Is that passion gone with you and Jonas, Leo? Or was it ever there?
It certainly was there. I'd say probably the best time of our lives was the summer of 1918. And there was a real scourge of squirrels happening in Southern California. And this is true. It was they were eating oats. They were eating wheat. And we had a brief turnaround where we found a passion in catching and killing squirrels together. And that was something that we could both, we had a goal to focus on. And there was something sort of competitive about it, which was fun. But eventually, you know, like anyone else, you get older, you transition from killing squirrels to caretaking a haunted mansion on a hill. And I don't have those outrageous expectations of love. Sometimes love looks like, you know, picking up fingers together off of a bathroom floor.
I think it's great. I mean, you sound, you know, very happy. I just, there's part of me, and maybe this, I'm not, certainly not meaning to be rude, but there's part of me that kind of feels bad. Like maybe you're missing out on something, or maybe you've missed out on something because, you know, killing squirrels with your significant other is great, but there's, I feel like so many other things too that maybe you missed out on.
You mean like travel, eating out at restaurants and things?
Yeah. Traveling, eating out at restaurants. Yeah, absolutely.
Well, I do. It would be nice to eat out at a restaurant. Because there's something nice about looking at a list of foods and then picking one and saying which one you want and someone bringing you that thing. That tickles the hell out of me.
Wait, have you never done it?
Oh, no.
Oh, Leona, you got to do it. It's so fun.
Oh, now, what do you do? Do you sit there the whole time?
No, I can usually make a decision within, I would say, anywhere from 3 to 7 minutes.
Oh my! And they give you the menu well in advance, or do they give it to you when you arrive?
Oh, they give it to you the minute you get, like the minute you sit down, they give it to you. So you've not seen the menu prior to getting into the restaurant.
Oh my goodness!
Yep, and then you scan it. You know they break it down into sections too. There's appetizers, entrees, and desserts.
All three,
cocktail menu on some menus.
But which one of those things do you eat at the restaurant?
Oh, Leona, you can eat all three of them at the restaurant.
They let you stay there for the whole meal?
Yeah, it usually lasts, on average, I'd say about 1 hour and 10 minutes.
I'm going to have to take this up with Jonas because that's not what he told me at all.
Well, what did he tell you? Because that...
He said you pick one round of food. And if it's the right one, if it's the one that they just have to be serving, then you can stay and eat it. And if you get it wrong, you're never allowed to come back.
Oh, so he made it a game.
He has a gambling problem. So I think that might factor into it. Should I say that on a podcast?
Well, it's okay.
My husband has a gambling problem.
I'm sure there's people who listen to the show who might have gambling problems.
Oh, well, you're not alone.
I mean, I hope he's getting the... what he needs.
I doubt he will, but you know, he doesn't have much time left and you gotta have something to talk to God about.
Leona, can I ask you again, what might be a very personal question, but you mentioned that your father was in debt and that's how you became married.
Yes.
Do you have any ill will towards your father now?
Oh, yes. I mean, a lot of unresolved issues towards my father, certainly. There was a long... I go every year on the anniversary he died, and I shoot his gravestone. And the police had reached out to me to say this thing is happening. And I told them, I said, I did it and I'm going to do it. And don't you try and stop me. And don't you stand in the way of the gravestone, or you're not going to like what happens.
I mean, you got a whole mess of problems if they do that, though.
Right. They just leave me be, I think. It's sort of a lost cause sort of thing.
I think your relationship with the police in Southern California is tremendous.
I can't imagine anyone having a better relationship, really.
They're so lax, it feels like.
I pay them handsomely. I mean,
I like you.
Listen, I'm a renegade, and I've never met a cop I liked, but I've met some crooked cops that I'll have a drink with.
I think that's a great way to think about life.
It's been a real trip. You know, there has been a lot that I've been able to do in the past several months. But you know, now it's fun being a little old lady because no one suspects you. So sometimes I just waste their time. You know, I'll call and I'll say, oh, you know, I work at the zoo and everyone's stealing the animals at the zoo. And then they'll get there and they'll call me back and I'll say, oh, you went to the wrong zoo. And then, you know, and it just sort of goes on like that. Again, I've never liked authority, but yeah, you know, I'd find ways to have fun, Adam. I still do.
Leona, that crank call is a great idea.
It's amazing that people haven't gotten smarter, you know? Because you'd think, I mean, how many zoos feasibly could there be? But time and time again. Yeah, time and time again. Well, do you mean this? Sometimes I don't even have to say the zoo. They'll be like, oh, did you mean the San Diego Zoo? And I'll say, yes, I did. And then, you know, hours pass and they go down there. And I don't know. We need either abolishment or reform, certainly, if they're going to fall for those jokes time and time again.
I got to tell you, you know, when I was a kid, I know I'm a little younger than you, but we had a thing called caller ID. And then when that came out, something else came out called Star 69 that would block your number on that caller ID. So you could make crank calls all night long.
Yeah. Well, when I was a girl, they had a thing called you could look out your window. And if you saw a spark going along the telephone line from someone's house, you'd say, oh, I know I'm getting a call from them. And that's a crank phone call. But if you didn't have a long enough neck to look out your window that far, you were SOL. Do you know what that means?
I think I do. Shit out of luck.
Yeah, you said it, not me.
Well, I don't. Yeah, you're too sweet to say it.
Oh, no, I think you're too sweet to think it.
Oh, well, yeah, you're just the best. I got to tell you, Leona, I mean, I don't know what Jonas's situation's like, but at some point, if we can set this up, I would like to take you out to a restaurant for a meal.
Do you mean that?
I do mean it.
You're not just pulling on my pearls?
I'm not just pulling on your pearls, I promise. Oh,
well, just out of curiosity, what sort of cuisine do you think someone of my age and station would enjoy?
Have you ever heard of Applebee's?
It's a neighborhood restaurant?
It's a neighborhood restaurant, Leona.
Wow.
And it's American cuisine right down the middle. You can get anything you want there. You can get a steak, you can get a salad, anything at all.
Anything at all?
Anything at all. Appetizer, entree, and dessert.
And settle a bet for me.
Okay.
Unlimited refills. Are they real or not?
It depends where you go. It is a real thing. It is a real thing.
That son of a bitch. I'm going to get Jonas. He said, he acted like, why would I even think of such a thing? Where did I even get that? And I said, I know I've heard it somewhere.
I'm floored by this, that the fact Jonas doesn't want to take you out to a meal.
It is, it is, it's not a, it's a specific form of emotional trauma at a certain point.
Of course. It's just neglect, really.
And you know, for years, Adam, for 25 years, I thought there were only three restaurants.
What?
He said, from the time that I found out about restaurants to the point that I got wise, he said, there's no point in going to a restaurant because there's only three. And the lines will be too long because there's only three restaurants. There's no way we possibly get in. And I said, how can that be? There's only three restaurants? And he said, one serves pork chops, One serves plain noodles, and one is just broth. That's what he told me.
You're not going to want to go to any one of those.
No. And I thought, well, I can make broth at home.
It's super easy, right? I mean,
it's very super easy.
I'm curious.
That's the brand I use.
What's what's Jonas's gambling game of choice? What's his poison?
What's the one? It's where you throw a snake in the sand, and then there are three rats around it, and there's a number on each of the rats, and the first rat to I think it's the first rat to sell the other rats out to get snake bit. I don't know what it's. Is that roulette?
I don't think it's traditional roulette.
Oh, okay. Well, then that's another lie.
That game does sound fun, though.
It's all he does. And if he can't go there, he watches it on TV.
any big events coming up at the house on Haunted Hill? Anything you got going on? Any more cult meetings? Any more gatherings?
Well, we were supposed to host the VMA's after party, but that clearly didn't happen. And so, you know, cut to me throwing away 8,000 little Dixie cups of pudding. I wish someone had given me the heads up. Probably next would be we do a big Carrot Top and Melanie Griffith host a big Halloween party every year, and they typically do it at the house on Haunted Hill. But they're fun. People don't really know their friends, but they're good people. You know, Hollywood, down to earth people.
Yeah. Well, I got to tell you, if there's an extra seat, I'd love to go to that party.
If you want to, something we do is we can sneak you in through a dumbwaiter. But don't let me forget, because that has happened before. And, you know, that's kind of, for lack of a better term, one more body. You know, there's not a lot of air in the dumbwaiter. So just, do you have a good knocking hand?
Yeah, I do. Both my hands are pretty strong.
Oh, great. Then that shouldn't be a problem.
Well, I tell you what, and then we can hammer out those details over a couple of half-off appetizers at Applebee's.
And an unlimited refill.
The Pepsi you can drink, Leon.
I'm a Pepsi girl.
Well, I can't wait to have this meal with you. Leona Slides, thank you so much for coming by and talking to us about the house on Haunted Hill. And dagnabbit, you're just the sweetest.
Oh, I'm overjoyed to be here. And I wish you the very best of Labor Day weekends.
You as well, Leona.
Oh.
Thank you so much for listening to My Neighbors Are Dead. I've been your host, Adam Peacock. The show is produced by myself with Nate DeFort and edited by Nate DeFort. Original music was done by Jesse Case, along with Dane Halverson, and our original artwork was done by Mark Nishan. I want to give a very special shout-out and thank you to Andrew Farmer for coming by and playing Leona Slides. Andrew is the GD best. Like we said before in the intro, you can catch Andrew as the co-host of Scary Stories to Tell in the Pod, and if you're on Twitter and Instagram, you can find him at @thatsajellyfish. If you like the show and you want to support us, please like and subscribe. And if you'd like to donate to the show, you can find us on patreon.com at My Neighbors Are Dead. Follow us on Instagram at My Neighbors Are Dead and on Twitter at My Dead Neighbors. Again, thank you so much for listening to the show, and we'll see you next week.
Oh, hello, you.
What's up, hoes?
I'm Mary Kay McBrayer.
I'm Mary Amelia Byer.
I'm Rachel Estridge.
And we like scary movies.
Let's be more specific. We like analyzing scary movies.
Okay, but let's be a little bit more specific. We like making fun of scary movies.
Let's be even more specific. We have to make fun of scary movies so that we can sleep at night.
We host a horror comedy podcast called Everything Trying to Kill You that rips all your fave horror movies a new one.
And bonus, we'll tell you jokes from the perspectives of
feminist ethnic minorities
and queer women, which might be something you haven't considered before.
Sure looks like Hollywood hasn't.
So check out Everything Trying to Kill You.
New episodes every other Friday on Campfire Media.
Campfire.